Welcome to Always and Forever, a spoiler-free One Tree Hill podcast where we analyze and dissect the greatest teen show from the early 2000s.
This week we are discussing Where Did You Sleep Last Night, the sixth episode of season four, which was written by William H. Brown. And a little fun fact about this, I noticed that IMDb, so William H. Brown is credited in the One Tree Hill DVD box sets, but IMDb credits Michelle Fertney Goodman, and Michelle is also credited with every episode of season four.
Weird.
Again, this is all on IMDb. However, in like, I was just looking through the DVD box set for season four. She is properly credited with episode 12 of this season. So, I don't know what that deal is, but it was just something I decided to flag and I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, because usually, like, there's the lead writer who is credited for that episode.
Mm-hmm.
So William is not credited on IMDb?
William H. Brown is credited.
Oh, okay, so it's just two people. Interesting.
Yeah, William H. Brown is credited, like, both of the, like, on the episode itself and on the DVD box sets, but Michelle Fertney Goodman is credited for every episode in season four. So I'm just like, it was just an interesting little thing. I wanted to flag right there. Anyway, so I don't know what that is. Maybe, I don't know if Michelle just, like, went on IMDb and just added more credits for herself. I don't know. And I'm like, why would you want to do that for season four? Like, at least do it for season three if you want to do it.
Oh my God.
Anyway, the episode was directed by Paul Johansson and originally aired on the CW on November 8th, 2006.
According to the episode description in our OTH DVD box sets, this is the one with extracurricular activities. Lucas rejoins the Ravens, a mystery man takes an interest in the team's fortunes, and Brooke will be seeing a lot of her new boyfriend at school. He's her English teacher.
This is the part where I say somebody told me that this is the place where everything's better and everything's safe, but is it really safe? I don't really know.
Yeah.
All right, I'll deliver the line anyway. Somebody told me that this is the place where everything's better and everything's kind of okay.
Okay. Throwing punches in a boxing ring, I'm Caitlin Ilinich.
And prepared for the end of our season four coverage in 3 months. That is 3 months we are going to be done with season four. Just like these characters will be done with high school in 3 months, Caitlin. I am Jeremy Rodriguez.
Oh, I heard that reference too, and my mind was like, what?
Yeah. We don't need to say the line that we always say if you're a regular listener.
You know
what we want to say.
You know.
If this is your first episode of Always and Forever, then go back and listen to, I don't know, like 60-some episodes of like inside jokes and references. Anyway, this episode is titled After the Song by Leadbelly, but it was popularized by Nirvana on their MTV Unplugged album. And the song is called Where Did You Sleep Last Night? And the way I interpreted this song was just like, I feel like the characters just weren't being true to their other half, quote unquote, because we see Nathan not necessarily telling Haley the truth about dealing with Dante. Brooke is also lying to Rachel about her affair with her teacher. And I was also thinking like maybe Peyton is lying to herself about her strength possibly, but that could be a reach.
Yeah, I was thinking it must have to do something with Peyton, just because like that line, tell me, where did you sleep last night? And she's having difficulty like being in her home, finding safety. But I don't know, like none of the lyrics truly like connect to that. But that was like what my, based on the title and like what the song is saying, I was thinking like it has to reference Peyton in some way and the struggles that she's going through in this episode.
And she is sleeping in different places.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a pretty song. Like, I really, like, I listened to both versions of it. I did enjoy it, but...
It is. It's like an old-timey song. I was trying to figure out, like, what year it came out, because whatever Spotify had, it sounds like it's a much older song.
It is an older song, so, yeah. I think it was, like, from the 1940s.
Yeah.
I looked it up earlier. I don't remember what it was now, but yeah, it is, like, it is an older song. And then Nirvana famously covered it. So, but speaking of Peyton, shall we get into talking about Peyton and her new half-brother, the real Derek?
Yes, to me, this was the more interesting storyline in this episode, personally.
To an extent, I do agree, but go on.
I think, so it's nice to see Peyton connect with a family member again, because, like, we really... Like, her dad, where is her dad? Her dad is MIA. Ellie, you know, died last season. So, like, we got to see that connection and that relationship, which was really awesome. But, of course, it couldn't continue. So, now, we thought we were seeing it originally with Psycho Derek, and that didn't happen. That wasn't real. So, now, we're finally seeing someone for her to connect to and learn a little bit about. But Derek is, he's tough. He's a tough guy. And what's the best way to put it? I feel like I understand the message he was trying to, like, instill in Peyton, in saying, like, she can do it. She can be strong. She can face these challenges and the fear that she has. But I think there needed to be a little bit more empathy from his character because she went through a really traumatic experience.
Right, exactly. Like, the whole thing, like, where he said that, oh, like, that's your problem. You think of yourself as a victim. But I'm like, I feel like I understand, like, at a base level what he's trying to say. It's like, maybe rather than be a victim, say that you're a survivor. Like, I feel like there's different ways to frame this, as opposed to just, like, stop saying that you're a victim. And it's just like, no, she went through something pretty damn horrible here. Also, on a related note, too, I really don't like how Lucas said to Peyton, how he said, like, you know, if you let this change you, he wins. But I'm like, how is Peyton really changing? Like, she's locking her doors now? Like, I feel like these are, like, really realistic reactions here.
Yeah, and the fact that, like, Derek is still on the loose, it's even more of, like, a normal reaction. You don't
right,
know
exactly.
where he, like, is and if he's going to come back. That's kind of wild to me. And it has,
yeah.
The incident just happened. Like, give her some time to feel her feelings.
Right. I did like how he did try to tell Peyton, like, you know, you're not alone, Peyton, but eventually you're going to have to be. But until you're ready, you have a key to my place. I really do like that he extended that offer to her in, like, a very non-judgy way. And when Peyton does come over, like, he just lets her stay with him. And I felt like that was a really, really great moment. I don't know, and I wish I knew, like, a little bit more knowledge about, like, what's the best thing to do for somebody who survives an ordeal like this, but I feel like both Lucas and Derek aren't giving Peyton necessarily the best resources here.
And they're the only two that are checking up on her. Like, no one else in Tree Hill is checking up on Peyton, which makes no sense to me at all.
Can we talk about Brooke's reaction for a second?
Yeah.
Oh my god. So Haley tells Brooke, Haley, who also doesn't check in on Peyton,
no.
It doesn't seem like.
Nathan,
like, we never see an episode,
none of them.
Like, a single scene where Haley even checks in on Peyton, like, but obviously, like, Haley knows, like, either through the grapevine or maybe off screen she has a conversation with Peyton. I don't really know. But then Haley informs Brooke that, like, oh, Brooke isn't coming to school. And then Brooke's like, oh, great, so, like, you let one stalker into your life and then you have to ruin it for the rest of us. Like, what? And then, to her credit, Haley does say, like, yo, like, she went through something really horrible, and you should know that. And then Brooke says, how is she doing anyway? And then also tells Peyton, or she also tells Haley not to tell Peyton, and she asks.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, okay, like, this is, like, this is cool. This is, like, a great way to, like, get around it, but, like, to get around the whole fact that she's mad at Peyton, but she doesn't want Peyton to know that she cares. But I feel like for something of this magnitude, I feel like this is something that should make Brooke want to reconnect with Peyton and be like, hey, you went through something horrible. Are you okay?
I would have liked to have seen that in this episode. Even if they are still not on good terms as friends, she could have at least checked in.
Yeah.
And it, like, where's the scene with Haley checking in on Peyton or Nathan checking in on Peyton? Like, no one else, none of the adults, not even Karen. Like, it's, and then, you know, her dad. We don't see her dad. We haven't seen her dad in a while. Oh, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Which I'm really confused about this because she refuses to call her dad because she's like, oh, what can my dad do? But at the same time, Peyton is, like, worried about the fact, like, oh, like, you know, I need somebody. Like, you know, old people always leave me. So, like, what do you want? Like, you literally could call your dad. So why aren't you? Besides the fact, like, okay, maybe the actor wasn't available and the writers just didn't want to write a storyline about him or pay him. You know?
Yeah, it had to do with something like that because in normal circumstances, the dad would be written into the storyline. Like, that would be a major thing in this episode, you know? Working through the trauma, him potentially getting her to therapy, and there's no follow-up with the police or anything about what's going on.
Yeah, or, like, working with, like, a victim services coordinator or something. Instead, they just want to position Peyton as just, like, a loner.
Yep.
And
painting her walls white.
Yes. And I'm like, we've had this for so many seasons with Peyton being a loner. It would really be nice to see her, like, go to therapy. Instead, Derek takes her to a boxing lesson thing. And it's like, okay, great. So, like, you know, Peyton has to think about every traumatic thing she has ever, ever been through. And she gets to punch it out. Which, I'm not saying, like, you know, that's, like, this is, like, a healthy way to let out her frustrations. Like, great, she's doing that. But also, maybe seeing a therapist, too, would be great.
Yeah, it's like, a starting point is getting your frustrations out physically, like she was. In a safe way.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, yeah, where is the therapy? Like, why are we not including this as a major storyline in the follow-up episode to the attack? It makes no sense to me. And the boxing scene is very powerful. That's a standout scene to me, personally. The music.
Yeah, it's very powerful in how it's shot, too. It's very well done. And Hillary's accent is phenomenal.
So, Paul Johansson, I mean, directed this episode. He did a fantastic job in that moment. And then, in addition to that, the editing for this episode with the scenes that flash through her mind as the song is playing and she's punching. Like, it's a very powerful scene because, like, she is... Derek, I mean, this was, like, what he was trying to do all episode is to, like, make her feel strong and not feel that fear, which is great. But, like, that is just one piece of this. I think
right.
She needs to talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. And I give, like, you know, the character of Peyton a hard time. And I feel like it's not necessarily Peyton. It's, like, the way she is written sometimes. Like, I feel like she's written very irresponsibly. And I feel like she deserves so much more.
I know.
And I know in my fuck, marry, kill of, like, Brooke, Peyton, and Haley, like, I would kill Peyton. As I said that in our mailbag for, on patreon.com/alwaysothpod.
Yeah, you did.
But it's just because, it's just this version of her. I don't like it, and I feel like she deserves so much better.
You know, she is always made out to be, like, the vulnerable one and the one that has to be saved. It's just mm-hmm. like that quote, you're always saving me. Like, Lucas is always saving the day with her since season one. And I feel like she's leaning into that in this episode. Like, her character is, like, leaning into that. But I also feel like it's kind of a natural response to like want to feel comforted and whatnot. But I understand at the same time. So like I'm feeling a lot of different things at once. Like this is being portrayed for her character like repeatedly for this whole series. So like we need to see something different. But at the same time, I understand in this moment, like you're going to want that comfort and to have, you know, someone take care of you. Like like Lucas is trying to do. And to an extent, Derek, in his own way, is doing as well, but not as tenderly.
Right. But the whole thing about, like, I feel like she's really taking it to heart, the fact, like, oh, Derek doesn't want to have a relationship with me. But I'm like, Lucas is there for you. Like, Lucas is doing an okay job, at the very least. He's having some issues, of course. And you can call your dad. I'm like, I feel like I'm just frustrated because the fact, like, Peyton really genuinely is not alone. Like, she has people she can turn to.
I guess maybe she also feels more alone because she doesn't have her best friend anymore.
Maybe. Like, life is hard. Like, life is hard as a teenager. I get it. I'm really frustrated in the direction of her sometimes.
Yeah. No, I agree. I definitely agree.
So. But anyway, can we move on?
Yeah. I mean, that actually really, like, that was a decent part of this episode.
Yeah, really.
We might have different feelings or might not agree with, like, where it is going, but, like, it is a pretty interesting part.
Yeah, it is the best part, despite it having some issues.
But we can talk about happier things, and I'm being sarcastic.
Happier things? You mean the next point is that, like, Dan is questioning Whitey? Like, yeah, that's a happier thing.
Dan is always a happier story, right?
So Dan asks Whitey, he's like, oh, you saw that Bible verse on my wall last week. You know, what does that mean to you? And then Whitey says, like, oh, it's a reference to Cain and Abel, which I didn't even realize until I watched this episode. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. But I don't know the Bible. And then Whitey essentially tells Dan, like, you know, Judgment Day is awaiting us all. So kind of leads a clue that, like, Whitey could potentially be a suspect. Yeah. But also Dan has also got some instant messages from this mysterious person as well, so.
Yeah, that was towards the end of the episode.
Yeah, I believe it's the coda, actually.
That's what I was about to say. You're talking about the coda now.
I know, I jumped ahead this time. I am sorry. To be fair, it has been a month since we recorded an episode.
Yes.
So, listeners, we're struggling here.
We're rusty. Like, yeah, it's been a minute.
So if this isn't your favorite episode of us, like, give us a 5-star review anyway, because it helps the algorithm.
So I feel like Dan was going to Whitey's office to, like, he's just trying to figure out, like, who did it. And that's his biggest suspect so far, you think?
I'd say so, yeah. He goes and positions it like, why aren't you forcing Nathan to go to Duke? And then Whitey's like, well, I made a mistake when I pressured you into basketball, and I'm not doing the same mistake again, which I love that for Whitey. You know, like, learning from his mistakes in the past, like, not to, like, push his students, and he's just, like, letting, like, Nathan live his own life.
Yeah.
Another person who's living their own life is Lucas. Lucas rejoins the Ravens team, and he is wearing number 22, which was Keith's number, we find out.
I know, it's so sweet. It's a sweet little reference. So now the brothers are 22 and 23.
I love that. Yeah, I love that cool. So much. Is that how old they are? No, that's not how old the actors were at this point. No.
I don't think so. Yeah.
Just thinking about it. But anyway, this is really nice to see. And I like the little moment that Lucas had with Whitey. How Whitey was like, oh, you know, your mom is worried about you, but she loves you so much. Don't let her down because, like, she's willing to put her worries aside about you playing the game because she wants to see you happy.
Yep.
And Lucas is going to get to show himself off for 15 minutes a night, which I like to see that.
Yeah. And in they showed the scenes from the game which they moved on closer to the state championship. They're in the playoffs still, but yes. Yeah, they're moving closer to that. I think they have one more game.
They do. They did say that.
So that is super exciting. And you got to see Lucas play for his 15 minutes in this game. And then Whitey called him back and he was on the bench, but like he seemed happy. And I feel like that's a good compromise, you know?
Yeah. He gets to like be in the action too, also. That's yeah. Good for him.
Just being part of the team is like, that's where he is supposed to be.
And he's the captain too, still. Did you see the little C on the jersey as well?
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, he still is the captain. I clocked that when I watched it this time. So he is still like a co-captain. So, I mean, granted, like, you know, the team didn't necessarily need two captains. So Nathan was probably just like, you know, taking point for, you know, while Lucas was away.
I mean, am I really going to ask this? How long has Lucas been away?
Caitlin, stop. Just, we don't need to know this.
I'm just going to pose the question.
It could be anywhere between 2 days and 3 months. Okay, who knows? Listeners, feel free to let us know that. What do you think?
It's like, was it just a few games or what? But who knows? We will never know.
No, we won't. We will not. Anyway.
But we now know some other things that we didn't necessarily want to.
Caitlin, I don't want to talk about this.
Oh, God. It's so cringy.
I don't want to.
And just, like, hearing Sophia's thoughts about the storyline and on the Drama Queens podcast, how basically just how cringy it was. Like, she didn't want to do the storyline. She didn't approve of it. But, you know, you're kind of forced. You're forced into it. And you just have to do, I guess you just have to do the work.
You got to do the work because you're getting your paycheck.
Yeah, but like looking at the scenes again, knowing what I know, and you could just assume that that's what Sophia thought in real time because it's Sophia. Like, you know that she didn't like that storyline. But like seeing it now, it's so cringy just to think like, oh, Sophia had to like fake this so much. But that's what actresses do, so.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm pretty sure she fakes for a living.
Yeah, but like something that at your core you don't believe in, you know? And
right,
that's like
exactly.
To have a high school. So basically, the big reveal is that Nick is Brooke's teacher.
Yeah, which we learned in the last episode, but it's revealed to Brooke officially yes. In this episode.
And Rachel did not know this.
Yes,
Rachel
also did not know.
Was the one who set Brooke up.
And then, so, like, Brooke, like, essentially, like, Lena leaves the classroom after finding out. She's like, I gotta go to the nurse. I think I'm gonna be sick. So she's talking to Rachel in the bathroom. And then Rachel is saying, like, listen, like, he's probably about as embarrassed about the situation as you are. And then Brooke gives her this face. And Rachel's like, okay, maybe not that embarrassed. But I'm like, no, Nick should be embarrassed here. He absolutely should be embarrassed. Like, Brooke has nothing to lose. She's just a, you know, she's a student. Like, you know, what? Like, yeah, she lied about her age. But again, who gives a fuck? She's a teenager. You know, she's a lot, like, she can do, like, stupid adolescent things. And Nick, like, I have space for him, like, not knowing the fact that Brooke was a teenager and was a student. But after finding out Brooke was a student, that's when he should have cut it off and just said, okay, we can't do this. Instead, Brooke comes into the classroom, decides to apologize to him for lying to her age, which, whatever, you go, Brooke. And then Nick responds by kissing her.
Yeah.
And saying that they want to continue the relationship. Why?
I cannot imagine. Like, you are a brand new teacher at a school. You find out this information, and then you're kissing that student in the school? It's like mind-blowing.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. Well, the thing is, once he found out, that should have been it.
Yeah.
And it's done.
But no, they decided to go the sexy route. But and I remember, like, back when I saw this, like, I was a teenager at this point. I remember thinking, like, oh, he kissed her. Oh, that's hot. Because, I mean, I thought, like, okay, the actor's hot. Like, you know, like, whatever. But now, like, as somebody in my late 20s, I am like, no, don't do this. You should not do this whatsoever.
I'm trying to think how they could have done a similar storyline with Brooke dating someone that wasn't a teacher. Like, she was dating someone new, and it was, like, kind of fun and exciting. Like, how could they have portrayed that with, like, someone her age and not included the whole teacher aspect? Because, like, they're just trying to make these teenage girls older than they are. I mean, that is what TV, like, teen dramas often does to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not the first storyline that I've seen like this.
Mm-hmm.
But
Pretty Little Liars.
Oh yeah, that's a big one.
Which is even worse than this. It's like
oh yeah, even worse. It's like playing out some sick fantasy of the writers or the creators. I'm speaking generally, you know, not
like
just
an authority
this show.
Figure with like. An authority figure with like another lower level employee, like yeah. Like that's sticking with me, but
yeah,
it's awful. And also, he is not being subtle at all. Like, did you catch that one part or in like that one montage where he's like leaning over Brooke, like he'd tried to help her with like a question on a test or something like that? He has his hand on her back.
Yes, yes.
And like Rachel is totally clocking this. Like, she's not stupid. Like, she's. Like, on to them.
And she knows that Brooke is sneaking out at night to go off with Nick.
Yeah.
So, and one other thing I wanted to point out, they really position this as Brooke, because, like, the season just started, and one of the first episodes was about Brooke's birthday and turning 18. So, like, they're really positioning this storyline as, like, she's 18, and they even said it in the episode, I'm 18. While it is technically legal, it is, but regardless of the legality of it, it is still a teacher-student dynamic.
Yeah, no, it's so horrible. And also, too, so we also learned that Brooke is, she's a last-minute addition for this new fashion show called Tart, the Textile Art Road Tour. And she has, like, Nick helping her out by just, like, standing there and, like, while she's putting pins and stuff in. And she's like, you help me with my work, and then I can help with yours. I can grade your papers, give Peyton an F. And then he's like, I was thinking something a little more physical. And then she says, isn't that all this is for you? Sex?
Oh, Brooke, and he's like, so no. Naive.
Yeah, and he's like, no, of course not. But I'm like, he's not even, like, delivering the lines in, like, a convincing way or anything like that. I don't know if this character is supposed to possess nuance at this point in the show. Like, is he supposed to, are we supposed to actually, like, be rooting for these two to be together? Because, like, right now I'm not.
I hope not. Because so far there's zero nuance. He's a creep.
But, like, Brooke is looking so cute. She's looking, like, you know, like this lost little schoolgirl. I mean, maybe that's what it's supposed to be. Like, are we supposed to be positioning him as a villain, like, taking advantage of a student? I don't know if the writers want us to think that, necessarily. Like, it's complicated for me.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I can only see it with, like, my adult brain.
Yeah.
And it's just creepy. It's just plain creepy. There's zero nuance. In one way, I understand, like, they're portraying it as the sexy thing, but I feel like they're also saying that it's wrong, too, because you hear, like, you see the judgment of Rachel, how she sees Brooke going off and whatnot. Like, she knows she knows it's wrong. So I think you kind of see it through that character's eyes. So it's like, it's two things at once. It's being portrayed as sexy, but at the same time, like, they might be acknowledging it a little bit through Rachel that it is wrong. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's, for now, that's how I see it.
Right. And I guess that is a, you know what, maybe I could give the storyline a little bit more credit because of the fact that that it is sexy, but it also is wrong. Because, you know, you always, maybe not always, but, like, you've had heard, like, about survivors of sexual abuse, for example, just, you know, saying that, like, there are times when they actually did enjoy, like, their experiences. Like, they enjoyed these sexual experiences. It doesn't downplay the fact that, like, what happened to them was wrong, though. And maybe that's what's happening to Brooke right now, in a way.
That's a good point. Well, it should be interesting to see how this progresses.
Yeah. And listeners, please tell us what you think, either by dropping us a message in our Discord or by sliding into our DMs, because we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, it's definitely a good storyline to talk about.
Yeah. But speaking of other creepy things, we also have this whole thing with Nathan and Rick Fox.
Dante.
A.K.A. Dante. And this guy is... I feel like this is a little bit more blatant. Like, I feel like we know that this guy is supposed to be a villain from the get-go. He's preying on a child. He is being very, very creepy.
Yeah, he, like, just rolls up in the car, the windows down, and he's just, like, rattling off all these things he knows about Nathan and his basketball career, if you want to call it a career. It's not really a career yet, but kind of.
And I just gotta say, like, I know bad people like this exist, like, you know, with, like, you know, like, they're sports bettors and they, like, you know, get involved in, like, some shady shit. But does this happen for high school basketball players? I can see it happening for, like, the NBA. I can see it happening for college. Does this happen for high school?
Yeah, it seems really extreme.
It's like, do you people that pay this much attention to high school basketball? I don't know.
I mean, basketball's big in North Carolina, but I don't know about high school, like, it being this serious.
Yeah. Like, are gamblers paying attention? I don't know.
And then, yeah, so, like, we get that one encounter of Dante coming up and just, like, talking to Nathan. And then later on, he actually gives Nathan a car.
He gives him the car back. Because this is originally Nathan's car, so...
it was originally Nathan's car. Because the motorcycle was... What do you call it?
It was taken away.
It was just taken away, yeah.
Towed
away. So, okay, so that was Nathan's car that he sold.
Yes, which is why Nathan was able to take it back, because he wouldn't have been able to accept the car as, like, a regular gift, because it would be against NCAA rules. And then Dante says, like, oh, no, it's your car. Like, I just got it. It's just changing hands. I'm just giving it back to you. So he's, like, kind of throwing Nathan, like, a little bone to try to show him, like, hey, you can trust me. See what I can do.
I guess I missed that. I don't know.
Yeah, they make a thing about that because Nathan initially declines it. He says he can't do it you know, the code and whatnot. But now he gives the car back to him. And, yeah.
Still seems shady, though.
Yeah. And this is very welcome because the two of them him and Haley are having a lot of money trouble right now. Their lights are getting shut off.
I have thoughts about all that.
Yeah, tell me.
Because, yeah, we've questioned before, like, how are they living in an apartment by themselves and Haley works at a cafe and Nathan doesn't work at all? Like, how are they even managing to pay rent, let alone everything else? I have no
Haley
clue.
Even says, I'm the only one with a job. But I'm like, there's a good point there, Haley. Maybe he should get a job.
Well, she also says, like, in order for him to get into college and get his scholarship, he has to, like, put all his focus into basketball so he can have a job.
Yeah.
I just don't understand, how are they existing? How are they paying rent? So it makes zero sense to me. So Haley went to Karen for some support. Well, she was at the cafe and then she got a call that a credit card was declined, and then she started to talk to Karen, and Karen said some nice things, but
that's earlier in the episode. Oh, yeah, when Karen earlier? Likes, yeah, earlier in the episode, yeah, Karen does say, like, oh, I can help you out, like, if you need an extra shift in the mornings, after school, like, nights, like, whatever you need, you know, I'll help you out. And then later on,
okay, maybe
and I think that's the conversation where you were going to go to, yes, where Haley comes to Karen and says, I don't think I can have this baby, Karen.
Yeah, yeah. And Karen's response is, I don't know, maybe this is a hot take, but I feel like it's...
I don't think it'll be a hot take. I think we're going to agree with you, but keep going.
Her response is crap to me because, like...
I agree.
Someone is going through financial troubles. Their lights are literally being turned off. Her credit card is being declined. Like, I guess they reached their limit. Haley's the only one with a job. Like, these are real life or death concerns. and Karen is basically saying to her, and you know, we love Karen. Like, we yes. both of us, we love Karen. But she's basically saying, everything will be fine. It'll work itself out. You can do it. While it sounds nice, it doesn't help in any way at all. It's not, there's no practical advice.
Yeah, she tries to give Haley perspective by saying, like, you know, when I was pregnant at your age, like, I didn't have two pennies to rub together, and I didn't have any family, I didn't have any friends, or anyone to turn to. Haley's like, that's not really making me feel better, Karen. And then Karen tries to say, like, no, but you do have great people in your life. You do have a great support system. And it's like, a support system cannot provide financial stability all the time. Also, Karen, have you ever heard of inflation?
I know. Like,
things cost more now.
compared to when she was having a baby.
Hell, even with, like, years ago. You know, when you and I were 17, Caitlin, like, things cost more now.
I know. And I'm just, like, hearing this conversation, I'm like, this is crap. You need to sit Haley down. Maybe you need to start talking about budgets and practical things. I don't know. I don't know. There's more practical things that could maybe help in this situation.
Especially Karen is somebody in her mid-30s. Like, she literally probably could tell Haley, like, hey, here's what I did.
Government, like, assistance.
Let's see if this can apply for you. Okay.
Like, there has to be something else.
Like, an actual piece of practical advice. I was not saying, like, you're not alone, you have friends. Great.
It is such a flowery conversation. Like, oh, everything will be fine and things will work itself out. And granted, in life, you know, a lot of times things do work themselves out. That can be true. But when you're talking about money, it's a totally different thing. And, like, that is a real concern. Their lights are being turned off, you know? Like, this, wow. Like, something has to change. Because how can you bring a baby in?
It also add fuel to the anti-choice narrative fire of this season, too.
Like, yes.
Haley says, I don't think I can have this baby, Karen. And Karen just basically says, like, oh, but you should, because you have friends and support system in your life.
Yep. I was thinking the same thing.
It's like, you know, of course you don't want Haley to, like, you know, run to, like, a rash decision. You don't want her to necessarily, you know, have an abortion and, you know, not necessarily want it. Of course not, no. Like, you know, at least, like, help her run through some of the options and, like, figure out, like, okay, here's an option. Are you sure this is what you want? Okay, you don't want that. All right, now let's talk about, like, ways you can make it so you don't do that, you know?
It is a lot. I cannot imagine the stress that Haley would be feeling in this situation.
And also, Dan won't help Nathan either. Yes. That's another little...
And as Nathan walked out and he's like, thanks for nothing. That's what I was saying in my head. I'm like, literally, thanks for nothing, Dan. You suck.
This is why rich people suck. There's a... I forget who it is, and I'm not going to say, make a guess, because I don't want to, like, you know, get, like, sued for defamation of character or anything like that. There is one celebrity chef I know who, like, won't give his kids any money And he's, like, super duper rich, and it just made me think about that.
Oh, wow.
The celebrity chef is just basically like, no, no, you can take care of yourself. And I'm like, you're a millionaire, and, like, you can't just give them, like, a little, like, I'm not talking about, like, buying them a house or anything like that, but, like, hey, if they're running into financial trouble, just throw them a bone and say, like, okay, yeah, I'll help you pay your bills this month. You know?
Whew. Yeah, that's, what are you doing with all that money if you're not going to help your family?
Yes. Anyway. On a completely different note. Gigi tells Mouth, like, I'm going to ask you out. Mouth is like, did you just ask me out? And she's just like, no, I didn't, but I'm going to. Just thought you should know.
She's so quirky and adorable.
This is cute, actually. Yeah, this was a little high point.
And then Mouth ends up asking her out in the end.
Yeah, but I don't really like how he was convinced to do it, because he's asking for Brooke for advice. And Brooke says, okay, like, let's give you the brush off 101. What you want to say is, like, you don't want to ruin that special friendship, and basically just a bunch of, like, other things. And then you see Mouth looks over at Rachel as Brooke is feeding this narrative to him. And I feel like Mouth is saying to himself, like, oh no, I don't want to be Rachel in this situation. So I should, like, you know, throw Gigi a bone. I don't like that. I'm like, I feel like it's kind of getting rid of people's agency, because, like, if Mouth doesn't want to go out with her, and I feel like deep down he did, he just never really thought of her in that way.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to say no, but I feel like to position him as, like, oh, well, Rachel told me no, so I shouldn't do the same things to this girl. Like, I don't like that comparison there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a weird comparison.
And I don't really know what it's trying to say either.
You should have just let her ask him out. Like, just let her do it. I don't know.
But it was cute that he eventually ended up doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know if you've ever been in this situation before, Caitlin, because you've been dating the same person since you were 12.
Not 12.
I don't know if you ever had, like, somebody you never really, like, thought of romantically, per se, and then you find out that they're interested in you, and then you're like, oh, I never really thought about them, but maybe, could it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I've actually had a situation like that.
Yeah, I feel like Mouth is going through that right now. I know I've had that happen before with people, where I'm just like, I'm not attracted to them. And then I'm like, oh, wait a minute, could I be though?
Yeah, that must be an interesting experience, because, like, if you never thought of it before, and then it's like you have to rethink it in your brain, like, huh, is that possible?
Yeah, and then the wheels start turning. I'm like, oh, maybe I'll just give it a try. And I feel like that's what happened with Mouth here, where he's like, oh, I get along with Gigi. Like, why not?
Yeah.
You know?
They work together, basically, so...
Yeah, which, I mean, you probably shouldn't, like, date somebody you work with. That's, you know, introducing a whole lot of dynamics.
But they're just students. They're peers. So, like, there's nothing wrong about it. But he is older than her. But, I mean, that happens in high school. Sophomores date seniors and whatever.
That's all. Yeah, that's only 2 years. Yeah. Oh, no. Like, I mean, I have been in situations. Like, one time I was on a... Is this okay to talk about on the podcast? Sure, this is okay to talk about. Nobody listens to this. I mean, people listen to it.
Here we go, Jeremy.
None of the people from that era in my life listened to this. They couldn't figure this out. But yeah, no, I knew two... When I was on the a school newspaper, there were two people who dated. And then they broke up, like... while they were still working together, and it was not a good situation.
Well, anything in high school that could create drama, like any kind of situation like that. But
and it was bad. To clarify, if any of my friends do listen to this, I'm saying in this situation, the guy was the asshole here.
Just to be clear,
not naming names, but I fully hold the guy accountable.
Oh boy.
Anyway.
Anyway, do you want to talk about the coda?
Yes! So, the coda is the song 12 by Alexi Murdoch. And it opens in Haley's bedroom, or Naily's bedroom, I should say. Nathan, not Haley's bedroom. Haley is worrying, and then Nathan just says, I took care of it. And Haley just assumes, like, oh my god, you talked to your dad? Thanks for doing that for me. And then she puts Nathan's hand on her belly while saying, thank you for doing that for me. And then she says, thank you for doing that for us.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Nathan is in some deep shit, it seems like.
Yep. And then next we're in Dan's office, and that's where he gets those instant messages from, what is it, Red Drum?
Red Rum? Do you know what Red Rum means?
Red Rum?
Yeah, you don't know what Red Rum means?
What's Red Rum?
Read it backwards.
Oh, murder.
Yeah. It's also just like it's just something that, like, you know, you, it's mostly a reference to The Shining, so, Jack Nicholson's character, like, you know, he just sees, like, Red Rum written on the walls and whatnot. Oh, and
I've seen The Shining several times. I don't really remember this. Okay.
And little Danny just keeps saying, Red Rum, Red Rum.
Oh, that rings a bell.
Yeah, it's, I don't know if it originated from The Shining, but I always think about The Shining whenever I see Red Rum right now.
Okay, yeah, I was wondering what that, my brain clearly is not functioning today, because we haven't recorded in a month, so I wasn't thinking.
It's been a month, it is okay.
I wasn't thinking too deeply about it until I had to read it, so.
Anyway, then we are going to Karen's cafe. This is when Haley hugs Karen and says, you were right! I have a good support system, including you, Karen! That's all I need in order to survive right now.
It's just not realistic at all.
Oh my god.
And then we're at the River Court, and we see a conversation between Nathan and Dante. And Nathan says, like, he's going to pay everything back. And Dante basically says not to disappoint him. And this is really, really concerning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried, Jeremy. I'm really worried.
It's definitely a prelude for things to come. Then we go to Brooke and Rachel's room. We see Brooke sneaking out, just like she did earlier in the episode, to see Nick. And then Rachel slyly gets up, looks through the window, and she sees Brooke and Nick together.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Next, we're in Peyton's bedroom. And this scene's kind of tough because he basically tells Peyton that he can't be like that guy who's always there for her. And that had to be hard to hear. And that also he doesn't want to be the guy. Like, he can't be it, but he doesn't want to be it. And I can't imagine what Peyton's feeling in that moment.
Yeah.
But after that, we see Derek leave and he's talking to Lucas outside. And Lucas says, like, you're just going to leave like that? And Derek says, no, I didn't say that. I have a lot of experience basically standing guard and watching out. And he's going to keep an eye on Peyton's house for the rest of the night, which that was like a really good twist because, like, from the conversation that he just had with Peyton, but like you do see that he actually cares about.
Yeah, because he said that Peyton needs to know that she can do it on her own.
Yes.
So he doesn't like want Peyton to know that like he's watching. This is very well meaning, and I hate the fact that we're gonna be flipping it for a second. But I feel like if I was in Peyton's situation, like, after she was, like, watched by a guy named Derek for, like, who knows how long, maybe finding out that, like, you're being watched again probably would be a little bit triggering a little bit.
Oh, I never thought of it like that. You're right.
I don't know. I don't know if there's something there or like, you know, if, like, is what Derek's doing a good idea? I don't know.
I wish he just, I understand, like, the doing it on her own. And I really like that.
I really like where he's coming from, 1,000%.
But in this moment, I feel like it would probably have been best if he just said, I'm going to be outside if you need me.
Right.
Just so, like, she knew that and could feel comforted by that and safe for a night, at least.
Yeah. But that during this like little ending scene, the camera switching back and forth between Peyton and Zarek. And Zarek is essentially cheering Peyton on. And he says, come on, Peyton, you can do this. And then finally, Peyton shuts off the light, fades to black, roll credits.
And we get Lucas voiceover throughout this coda as well. So I'm just going to read it all in one chunk. When life comes rushing at you from out of the darkness, who will you choose to face it with? Will it be someone you trust? Will they be wise? And will their love for you help them to guide you to the light? Or will they lose their way in the darkness? Will they make noble choices? Or will that person be someone untested, someone new? Life comes rushing at you from out of the darkness. When it does, is there someone in your life you can count on? Someone who will watch over you when you stumble and fall? And in that moment, give you the strength to face your fears alone. Yeah, so that fading, the fading to black. Yeah, that was pretty powerful.
Yeah, it was well done. So, what was your favorite quote of the episode?
So I actually liked the part that we just talked about with Derek, and when he says, she needs to know she can do it alone. And I know we take issue with that a little bit, but at the same time, like, the heart of it,
yeah.
I like that he's trying to protect her and also, like, give her confidence and strength.
Yeah, I totally support the overall message, but I really liked that with, like, what he's doing is a good idea. So somebody with, like, more expertise than Caitlin or I, again, please let us know, is this a good idea?
What was yours?
My favorite quote was when Skills met the real Derek and said, damn, who would have guessed Peyton's brother was a brother?
Yeah, that's funny.
Which, I don't know, like, it kind of reads as, like, white people writing for black people here. But, I don't know, like, I feel like it's kind of nice to see, like, Antoine Tanner deliver that line and kind of, like, it seemed like he was, like, kind of having fun with it, making fun of it in general.
Yeah.
So, I really enjoyed it. Anyway, what was your favorite musical moment?
I love the prelude 1221 by AFI, which played during the Peyton and Derek boxing ring scene. I've always loved that scene and that song. So, it was just a overall powerful moment with everything, like the directing, the editing, the song, all of it. So that was a great moment for me. What about you?
That is a really great moment. I have that down as an honorable mention. Well, initially I had the song It's You by Annie Stella, which is played sort of a whole montage. That's when Rachel asks if Brooke and Nick are done. Haley is talking to Karen about money issues. You know, the aforementioned problematic conversation from earlier. This is also when Lucas checks on Peyton. We see Brooke sneak out. And then, you know, Peyton, like, visits Lucas and the Mad Sherman and whatnot. I just thought that was a very pretty song. But then, after I was done watching the episode as I was prepping for this recorded, the song that I kept, like, sitting in my head was Do It Alone by Sugar Cults, which was the montage during the Ravens basketball games.
Yeah, that was fun.
And, yeah, you know, also showed, like, Haley at the cafe and Brooke with Nick. It was just, like, I feel like that was a fun song, so that was in my head. So I felt like I have to bump that up as my favorite musical moment.
Excellent. Yeah, there were some fun moments.
Mm-hmm. Which I feel like we haven't been able to say that for a little while.
I agree.
It was not enough to save the episode for me, though. So, for me, I'm giving it 3 out of 5 fight montages. Because I feel like the episode is passable, but there are a lot of issues with it. And I feel like we already went over all of them.
Yeah, I also give it 3 out of 5 locked doors. Yeah, I think we already did a pretty good job of explaining what we liked and didn't like.
Yes.
So, to me, it was just, it's like another episode of the season that is just kind of subpar.
Yeah.
It's meh. Like,
it was just okay. You know, there's not really, like, anything that's, like, really great or...
Yeah.
It's also not horrible either.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just kind of there. And like we've said before, I feel like binging these episodes, it's all better. But, like, just watching it on this episode, like, on its own, without continuing on, there isn't really anything that impressive in this episode. I would say the biggest highlight for me is the Peyton and Derek stuff.
I agree, yeah. And also to think about the fact that, like, we waited an entire month to get to this episode. I'm like, oh, that's it.
Yeah, I know. It feels a little anticlimactic. And also, like, I had to call Karen out in this episode. Like, who would have thought I would ever do that?
We always have to call Karens out, even though this is the only Karen who deserves rights.
I forgot we did that.
We still gotta call this Karen out.
That was so perfect. Because we had just started the podcast when all of that was happening with the Karen.
Everything that was happening with the Karens.
The Karens.
That was like the ultimate meme. It still is, for what it's worth.
Yeah. That's a great one.
Anyway, let's close out this episode, Caitlin.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for listening to this episode of Always and Forever. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at AlwaysOTHPod. You can also email us at alwaysothpod@gmail.com. That's always OTHPOD.
And you can also find Always and Forever on Patreon by supporting us over at patreon.com/alwaysothpod to gain access to our private Discord server where you can chat with us and other listeners. Bonus episodes, including our spoiler full mini episodes, our Drama Queens reaction podcast, Royal Review, and our movie podcast, Baker Soundstage. Also, if you subscribe at the $10 level, you can get these episodes earlier.
Yes.
Do you think that every time when you edit these episodes, Caitlin, like, yes, I get access to this episode earlier?
Yep.
Didn't even hesitate. Just like, yep, I do. I really do enjoy listening to this episode. We love listening to ourselves.
Oh, I love it. But yeah, we have some good stuff on Patreon, so please check it out. But if you can't support us on Patreon, you can also leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That's the easiest way to support us and to help One Tree Hill fans, new and old, find us. And if you leave us a review, and only a 5-star review, we may read it on the show.
Yes, it's been a while since we had one, friends. Yeah,
it's been a little bit. We need some love.
Yeah, it helps the algorithm as well. Like, we need all the love for the algorithm. Yes. Anyway, I am Jeremy Rodriguez, and you can find me in other places. On Twitter, it is Rodriguez Jeremy. I am also on Blue Sky. I just joined, so who knows?
What is that?
You don't know about Blue Sky? No. It's like a Twitter. It's like the place where, like, everybody is, like, leaving Twitter for right now.
Is it? I thought Threads was supposed to be that.
There is Threads as well, yes, but Blue Sky is also from the founders of Twitter as well. So it's like the original people behind Twitter, like, create a new platform. They didn't create a new platform. They're on the board of this new platform.
Okay, because I was about to say, why would they create another thing?
I mean, because Elon bought them out. I don't know.
They should have never sold it to him. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so now they're on Blue Sky. It's like this thing where you have to have, like, an invite code. I do have an invite code. I can send one to you if you're interested.
Maybe. I don't know anymore. Like, I'm Caitlin Ilinich, and you really can't follow me anywhere because, like, I don't even want to tweet. I feel very uninspired. So I don't think I've tweeted in, like, months.
Maybe find her on Blue Sky. I'll send her the invite code, you know.
I might delete Twitter. I don't even know. It's always up in the air.
Blue Sky is good. It's just that not enough people are on it right now. Yeah. And since it's like an invite only thing, it's kind of weird. But
okay.
Who knows? But you can find us. You can find the podcast on Twitter still for the time being.
Oh, yeah. You can find the podcast stuff, but just like me as an individual, I don't know.
We need to get you on Threads. I'm fucking around with Threads as well. You can find me there, @RodriguezJeremy_. And again, there's Blue Sky. Twitter, I am there for the time being, but, like, I'm just not enjoying it as much as I used to
be. It's a sad, sad place.
Anyway, we'll be seeing ya.
We'll be seeing ya. You jumped ahead.
We ended kind of on a bad note. Do we want that? I don't know. Listeners, come back to us next week. We enjoy you.
We might be in
you.
A better mood. Bye.
Follow Caitlin on Blue Sky, at Miss Irie.
Oh my God. Don't tell people that. I don't have it.
But she will by the time this episode airs.
Oh gosh. Maybe.
I'm going to stop the recording
maybe.
Now.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.